Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road. Nick Keyser here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. It is SEC Media Days this week. And to help us talk about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Jeff Schultz from The Athletic. Jeff, what's going on? Thanks for taking time to join us this morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you joining us. So, Jeff, what stood out to you yesterday from Greg Sankey, particularly as it pertains to potential SEC expansion in the future? Because he didn't come out and outright say it, but it seems like SEC very much interested in that somewhere down the line.
Oh, I think it's fair to say that if Notre Dame picked up the phone and called the SEC today, the SEC would be happy to take Notre Dame. And same for North Carolina, or same for a handful of other schools that would expand the blueprint, expand their potential to get an even bigger television deal, because that's really what it's all about today. But he didn't come out and say, hey, come here, we want you. But he didn't also say we're closed for business. We're going to stick with whatever, you know, 16 teams with Texas and Oklahoma. So he's, you know, now the SEC is in a good position, because let's say the worst case scenario, as someone defined it, the ACC, you know, starts to fall apart. And I think some of those ACC teams are going to be looking at the SEC. So the SEC would react, but my guess is they would be contacted by those ACC programs. And so if one or two more programs leave the ACC or something, the SEC is in a good position. So they're in a strong enough position, because they are a destination conference, that they don't have to worry about scrambling really too much.
You know, Jeff, I haven't really been able to commiserate with you since the USC-UCLA thing about how dumb this all is. But
right.
where do you think this is – what do you think ultimately long-term is the impact on college athletics?
You know, first of all, I grew up 15 minutes from UCLA, so this is pretty sensitive to me, because I didn't grow up thinking, wow, I can't wait to play my rival, Iowa. where I think it's going is, and I touched on this in that little notes column the other day, is I just think they're throwing – they're shooting cannonball-sized holes in the fabric of the sport. I mean, to me, college football has been unique in sports because of the tradition and the connectivity and the regionalism. The conferences are named, you know, things like the Southeast Eastern Conference because it's in the Southeast, the Pacific 8, 10, 12, because it's in the West. That's going to be lost. And, you know, I didn't like the Texas-Oklahoma thing. I got it, but I didn't like it because it meant that, you know, a group of teams in the Southwest was going to break up. But when UCLA went to USC, UCLA and USC went to the Big Ten, it's like, oh, my God, this is absurd, you know, like you thought. And I just think it's terrible. I think they're sacrificing, like I said, all that made college football special for basically more television dollars. And I get it. It is what it is. It's all about money. It's all about TV dollars. It's all about footprint. But when you throw away rivalries and history and everything else, basically, like I wrote, everything that's kind of breathed the life into college football, tradition, regionalism, and all that stuff, I just think it changes. Look, I don't know. Like, I think this could end because of the UCLA-USC thing. I think this really could be headed for basically two divisions, two conferences, almost like relegation in soccer. You're going to have the upper and you're going to have the lower. And hypothetically, let's say South Carolina is in the lower. I mean, you know, I kind of like that Georgia-South Carolina game every year. Georgia sometimes lost to South Carolina, has a hard time playing in Columbia. But it's kind of like television now wants every game to be Georgia, Texas, or something at that level. And I just don't get it. I don't like it. I don't think it's because I'm old. I do think some of the younger fans don't like it too. But again, dollars rule the day, and that's all that seems to matter.
I can tell you I don't like it either. Jeff Schultz from The Athletic with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Jeff, on the field this year in the SEC, do you think there's anybody in the conference that can challenge Alabama and or Georgia, or are we looking at those two and pretty much everybody else again?
I think those two. I think some programs are going to be better than a year ago and improving, but, I mean, Alabama has the best quarterback. They got a great quarterback from, a great running back from Georgia Tech. They got a great receiver from Georgia. They have all the returning players. They have Nick Saban, who's going to be angry because they didn't win it last year. They have players who are motivated because they lost to Georgia last year. And so, I mean, on paper and just logically, it's hard to root against or to think against Alabama. I do think, and I'm not saying this just because I live here, I do think people are overlooking Georgia just a tad, in large part because they lost so many players on their defense. And I get that completely. But I'm one that doesn't think their defense is going to, like, fall apart. Their offense should be better than a year ago because they actually know who their starting quarterback is going into the season. Now, there are a lot of Stetson Bennett doubters out there, but when you look at what this kid did down the stretch and in the postseason, I actually think their offense is going to be better because it's had one more year with Todd Monken. So, and I don't think their defense is going to fall apart. And maybe the biggest thing of all, they just have a really easy schedule. I mean, their opening game against Oregon probably is the highest profile game on their schedule. And I think they're probably going to be favored by two and a half touchdowns. I might be wrong. It's hard. I'm sure logic says they'll probably lose a game in there somewhere, but they're probably going to be favored in every game. So in answer to your question, I think it'll be Georgia, Alabama again. It wouldn't shock me if both those teams are undefeated going into that game. Regardless of who wins, it wouldn't shock me if they're both in the playoffs. And here we go again. I just don't see anybody else in the conference right now who could rise up and crack that top two tier.
So, Jeff, you're at the SEC Media Days, of course, in Atlanta. And Greg Sankey talked yesterday. I want to just ask you what you made of his comments on the playoff in particular. It's sort of the interesting, you know, he's like, yeah, we're good now, which I guess it makes sense. Like they, the previous haggling over auto bids doesn't matter much if we're basically have two leagues that matter anymore. But what did you make of that? And where do you think that will end up in terms of the expanded playoff?
Well, I think, you know, I think the SEC can be okay without auto bids because they know they're going to get a bid.
I think there's that.
I think most of the people pushing for auto bids are from programs or conferences that don't get auto, that don't, aren't in there every year, right? The Pac-12, at least what Pac-12 used to be, I'm sure would love an auto bid because they're not in there all the time. The SEC won't have that problem. If you win the conference, you're going to be in the postseason. In terms of playoff expansion, I think not just the SEC or from Greg Sankey. I think everybody's sort of quieted a little bit now because you almost kind of have to wait and sit back and see what happens with expansion. I mean, expansion, the ripple effect of expansion will probably impact where the playoffs go. I think we're going to be at four for at least a couple of years. I do think it's going to expand eventually. I would suspect 8 or 12. I don't see it going beyond that. But again, I just think because everyone is just kind of holding on right now to see where expansion goes, I think all the playoff talk is sort of on hold. No matter how many programs the playoffs go up or increase, the SEC will get more. So if it goes to 8, you know, the SEC will get probably two or three. If it goes to 12, they're going to have at least 5 programs in there probably from the SEC. I don't think that's an exaggeration. And so, I mean, the SEC is probably fine again with 4 because they're going to be in there every year. And a case could be made that maybe some coaches like more playoffs because that means they're going to get in the postseason. But, you know, maybe some programs like Alabama or Georgia may not, because that's more competition now. So I think there's arguments both ways. I just think the whole playoff thing, like I said, is on hold right now because we have to wait to see who else jumps ship from whatever conference.
You mentioned the relegation idea earlier, Jeff, which is interesting, the idea of an upper and a lower and maybe shuttling back and forth. Do you think it's possible that a Vanderbilt, a Rutgers, you know, pick whichever school with a weaker football program you want in these two power leagues could potentially be jettisoned at some point?
Yes. Yeah, I think not just because of the television dollars, but because of what's happening with NIL. We haven't even talked about that yet. And NIL has had and will continue to have a profound effect on recruiting and where players go. And who knows what other legislation might come down the road that basically empowers the athletes even more. I'm not arguing against it. I'm just saying it's reality. And so, I think the short answer is I do think relegation, or at least, like I said earlier, a two-tier college football thing is a real possibility. And I think that'd be a shame, you know, but it's it's where we are. I mean, why don't we have it in pro sports too, right? I mean, maybe the Texans should be relegated in the NFL. It's an idea that it's something that has worked in soccer. I just don't know that you're going to get billionaire owners to buy into the league if they think they might be relegated, though. That would be the only thing. But it would be an interesting thing to watch because it certainly would add a level of excitement to those teams that are, let's say, at the top tier of the bottom level trying to get back up, or at the bottom tier of the top level who may drop down, you know? Every week is a Ted Lasso episode.
Yeah, great stuff.
Now you've got me excited about, you know, the Detroit Lions should have been sent to play the Hamilton Tiger Cats
long
back in
ago.
Like the 80s.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a great idea.
It's a short road trip, too.
That's right. Could save on some gas. Jeff Schultz, our guest here on Robbie and Rex. Jeff, great stuff as always. Really appreciate you making time to be with us this morning.
Hey, great. Anytime, guys. Take care.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jeff Schultz, our guest here on Robbie and Rex. We'll continue the conversation coming up next. Take your thoughts on all things college football, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Jeff Schultz from The Athletic for joining us in the last segment. I get the feeling that Jeff is not a huge fan of the way things are going right now in college sports and college football specifically with some of the changes that have taken place.
Yes, and we're not just old men yelling at clouds. You're a young man who agrees.
Yeah, like, I mean, the Cats are already out of the bag at this point. Like, it's where it's going. So, like, it's we're going to get to a point where the only two conferences – I don't know about the only two conferences that exist, but certainly the only two conferences that matter are going to be the Big Ten and the SEC. I mean, we're already halfway there anyway, so it's going to get worse as we move forward here. I understand the TV money behind it. You know, maybe that ends up being a really good thing, and the TV money is gigantic, and that helps out the game. But it is going to be weird, like 5 years from now, as this continues to unfold, to look back and look around and say, hey, you remember what the Big 12 used to be and the Pac-12? And you remember when, you know, USC played against, like, Stanford and teams that were actually close to them?
That actually made sense.
Texas and Oklahoma. Like, Texas played against Texas Tech. Those fun times. Baylor. Now
TCU.
They're playing. Nice rivalry with, you know, South Carolina out there. It's an interesting time. I understand why it's happening, and it's going to continue happening at this point just based on money and everything that comes along with it. That doesn't really mean I have to like it, though. And so, I don't.
Yeah. You're just going to – I think the long-term problem is just when you just cut out big big chunks of the country. I think long term, you're going to lose overall viewership and support and interest. I could be wrong, but I mean, look around here. The SEC is in a great spot. The Big Ten's in a great spot. They're going to eventually absorb, you know, ACC teams. And I think probably a couple more of the Pac-12 programs will probably go to the Big Ten. But there's just a lot of programs with, you know, maybe not great, you know, national championship history, but you mentioned some of the Texas schools, Kansas, and some of the great basketball schools that are just being left in the cold here because they don't have great football programs. We should have Kayla Anderson on, talk about Washington State.
Yeah.
You know, Wazoo, man. And look, Wazoo, never been great, but like teams go into Wazoo and, you know, UCLA, USC,
Washington. The Fighting Jake Lockers up there, yeah.
You know, and that's good stuff. In-state rivalries. These and that's exactly – I hate to pine – I don't pine for, like, the days of most of my – well, my entire youth is, like, you're going to be in this bowl game because you're in this conference. You're going to play against the winner of this conference because you're in that bowl game. And then people are going to vote on the national champion and blah. Okay, I'm not pining for that. But even the BCS, usually we got the right matchup. There were a couple. The one year that Auburn got left out undefeated,
yeah. Then Oklahoma got smoked.
Yeah, the USC Oklahoma. You know, that was a year where, yeah. Oh gosh, okay. Go to four, and then you won't miss anyone. Then go to four, and you're never gonna have like a championship level team left out. But even at that point, we still had the sensible setup and the charm of college football regionally. It's about your neighbor and playing them and your little, you know, these trophies that go back to some, you know, frat prank in 1921 and stuff. I mean, and look, some of those things are going to continue, but if Washington State and Oregon State are playing in like the, you know, Mountain West or something, it's just, I'm sorry, but it just, it diminishes a whole bunch of the sport. So maybe it will just be such a tremendous product with this ACC or SEC Big Ten situation that it won't matter. But I fear that long term that's really going to damage it a lot. And if you're just going to do the NFL Junior, well, guess what? I'll just watch the NFL because that's the highest level of the sport. If it's just going to be minor league NFL, then okay, I got the NFL tomorrow.
Yeah, like part of my love for college football has been because it always kind of feels like a different sport, if that makes any sense. Like they're playing football, obviously, but college football and the NFL don't feel remotely the same in terms of the viewing experience, to me anyway, in terms of
totally
the
agree.
Enjoyability. Like I have always loved watching college football more than I've loved watching the NFL, and I thoroughly enjoy watching the NFL. Is that going to continue to be the case? I mean, maybe. At the end of the day, it's still college football. You know, the product itself in terms of the players on the field, the way the game is played, I don't know if it's going to change that much, but the tradition is a big part of it. And if you're an SEC fan, maybe you don't care as much. Like, you're still going to see Tennessee and Georgia, and you're still going to see, you know, Florida and Alabama and LSU and all these different teams. So maybe a team, if you're around here, it's not going to affect you too much. But, like, what are you doing right now if you're an Oregon fan or you're a Stanford fan or you're a Clemson fan? Like, you're watching all this stuff going on right now and you're thinking to yourself, okay, well, what do we do? Like, we're in a conference that doesn't mean anything anymore in the ACC. It's a really weird spot that college sports is in because the money, I mean, they're going to make money hand over fist doing this with the SEC and the Big Ten. But is it long-term actually good for the sport? That is the question that I think people are battling with right now, and I don't know. Like I don't know what the answer to that is. If I had to answer right now, I'd probably lean no.
Well, let's just go from the Tennessee fan perspective. I mean, you got the Vol Navy. It's going to be, you know, the fan, the scene around that place, especially if I mean, right now, early returns are that I think NIL is going to help Tennessee. Now, again, I think there's going to be more people catching up, but if they keep it rolling and they've figured out a way to take advantage of this, okay, well, that's what you've got to do to compete and bring in the kind of talent you want to have to actually compete with the best in the sport. So let's say that happens and they continue to progress and you got amazing Saturdays there. I don't think it'll feel that different for them. But what if, like, you're the Tennessee fan and then eventually, like, Vanderbilt just goes away? I mean, I'm sure there'll be a lot of, like, you can cackle about it and it'll be funny, right? And you'll probably enjoy it. But also, doesn't that kind of suck? I mean, even though
it would suck.
I mean, it's not like it's not one of the great rivalries because it's been so lopsided for the last century. But again, that's think about the century. Go back a century. That's why it's so great because, you know, General Neyland, who was Major Neyland, is brought in to beat Vanderbilt. I mean, you know, that's the fabric and history of the sport. This country used to be basically baseball, boxing, horse racing, and college football. Yeah. You know, and so you're just ripping all that stuff apart now. And I don't know for sure that this is going to happen to Vanderbilt, but I think it's certainly possible. It has to be discussed as a possibility. And so you're just going to just wipe away these things so that you can have the best TV inventory. And no, I think there's way too many people who are going to be disenfranchised as fans to make the product as viable as I think folks think it will be right now. But I mean, I hope I'm wrong, and I hope there's still some way to involve other programs and other conferences because, like last year, Cincinnati, that was a great story, and they were a great team. They belonged in the playoff. They didn't belong on the field with Alabama. That's right. A big problem, you know, and that's a problem the sport's had already is the rich getting richer and not being able to have any kind of parity. Maybe you have more parity among the top teams with this, which would be good, but I still want Cincinnati and things like that to be possible.
Well, the problem that I see right now, and this is not a new problem because this has been something that we've talked about over the course of the past really 10 years. I look at what's happening now with these conferences expanding. You know, Big Ten fans always care about college football. They're heavily into college football. We know that. We don't even have to say anything about the SEC. We know what college football means around these parts. Like, if you're a Pac-12 fan right now, what do you care about college football? If you're, you know, and I know that's part of why they brought Rutgers into the Big Ten was to try to get that New York market.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's worked all that well. Like, everybody talks about, well, with USC going over to the Big Ten, well, maybe the L.A. market really cares about college football again. If USC is the number one team in the country, they might care. Other than that, I think history has shown us that they really don't. So if you're trying to have more people around the country care about your product, is this ultimately going to be a good thing for it? I mean, obviously in the Big Ten and the SEC, there'll be a lot of eyeballs on your product, and I get that, but I look out west right now, like the Pac-12 has been largely useless for the last 5-6 years anyway. And now, I mean, they just have no chance moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, for those two programs, now they're going to be, I mean, the gap has been, before all this, had been widening so much on just your financial situation, you know, what you're getting from TV money, but the Big Ten SEC versus everybody else. So those programs will benefit. And if USC's great, LA will be into it and all that. But
I'm talking like great. They have to be great.
Yes.
If they're good, nobody cares in LA.
Real quick, someone on the text line did ask us to ask Jeff about the Pac-12 and Big 12, you know, voting not to merge. They're not going to merge. I think the Big 12 could take on some Pac 12 teams, and then the better ones will basically go to the Big Ten, the better football programs.
Yeah.
But also, the same texture says Vandy has been in talks with ACC for months. I mean, so Vanderbilt's like, you know what? I'd like to have way, way less money, even though we're a charter member of the SEC, and go to this dying conference.
Yeah, it's great stuff.
Come on now.
615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll continue to take your thoughts on our text line. I also got a Preds thought I want to get to next. I tweeted out a lineup yesterday of my projected lineup of where they stand right now, and you would not believe the conversations on Eli Tolvanen that were out there yesterday. We'll get to that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road on 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. I got some tickets to give away to see the Smashing Pumpkins and Jane's Addiction coming up at Bridgestone Arena on Monday, October the 10th. Be caller number 3 at 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Caller number 3 will win a pair of tickets to see the Smashing Pumpkins and Jane's Addiction coming up at Bridgestone Arena on Monday, October 10th, 615-737-1025. So, Joe, I put out this lineup yesterday, this projected lineup that I have of the Predators based on where their roster currently is. So I still think there's another move coming in some form or fashion at the top six, but right now this is the lineup that I threw out there. Forsberg, Granlund, Duchesne on the first line, a second line at the moment of Ellie Tolvanen, Ryan Johansson, Philip Tomasino, and then Trenton, Sisson, Janot, Sanford, Glass, and McCarron on the fourth line with the defensive pairs that we've talked about a lot this week. Josi Carrier, McDonough, Ekholm, Lauzon, Fabbro. There's a lot of interesting discussion on the Twitterverse yesterday about Ellie Tolvanen being on the second line. There are some people that are totally fine with Ellie Tolvanen getting a look there that think that he did not have enough of an opportunity last year, and that if he gets it this year on the second line, that he will respond and will score 20 to 25 goals, and that will be that. The Predators will have their top six moving forward. There are some that think that they have no chance if Ellie Tolvanen is in the top six, and kind of a big back-and-forth discussion on that front yesterday. Some say Tolvanen was just very unlucky last year and that he'll rebound this year with a bounce-back year. Joe, I think it would be a massive mistake for the Predators to enter into the season with Ellie Tolvanen in the top six. I just do. I mean, is there a chance that he could finally, I guess, blossom into the player that we thought he was going to be? Maybe. Is there a chance that some of last year was bad luck and that his shooting percentage responds and he ends up getting a few more to fall for him this year and he scores 20, 25 goals? Yes, there is that chance. And if he plays his way into that, I'm fine with it, but I'm not starting that way. Like, I'm not starting with my plan being Ellie Tolvanen in the top six with the Nashville Predators. I'll believe it when I see it at this point, quite frankly, from Ellie Tolvanen. Am I being too hard on Ellie Tolvanen with the Nashville Predators?
No, I mean, it was an entire season, and if you just look at everything with him, it basically had, like, about six weeks of – there's the Ellie Tolvanen that the Preds thought they had when they drafted him, which was in the 2021 season. The shot's elite, but he's worked hard, but so he's been able to keep himself in the lineup. But again, there's a lot of guys who were in the lineup last year, some of whom aren't around anymore, such as another top six guy, often Luke Cunnan, who just didn't do much. I think Tolvanen, I put him kind of in the spot with Fabbro in terms of young guy, has been underwhelming, could potentially still intrigue another team, and could potentially be part of something here soon. I mean, I think Tolvanen could be moved. I guess Fabbro is probably a little bit more attractive. I mean, it depends on what a team's needs are. But I look at both of those guys as potential trade pieces right now. If he's still around and they don't address it with something else, like they don't make another move that doesn't involve him, then I guess he'd be in the top six. But right now, if Ellie Tolvanen's in the top six when the season starts, I don't think that's good for the Predators. And again, doesn't mean that he couldn't respond and end up having a good season here or somewhere else and be a good player. But right now, if that's the case, that says they didn't address what they needed to address.
Well, he had 11 goals last year in 75 games. If you look at his numbers, there were a lot of things that he did well. Like defensively, he took a big step. He did have a very low shooting percentage. He shot 7.3% last year. And the year that we keep talking about with him in the shortened season, with 11 goals, 22 points in 40 games, he shot 16.9%. So that's a pretty dramatic drop-off from 16.9%. So I can certainly buy into
his shooting percentage being a little higher next year, and maybe that leading to some more production from Ellie Tolvanen. I still watch him play, and on his own, he doesn't create enough for me to think he's a reliable top six forward. Like, he's not a great skater, and he's still not great at getting to those areas where you've got to score goals in the league. So without seeing some progress there, which we've not really seen much of, like, he's just not all of a sudden going to become a great skater this year. When you get to this level, skating is, you either have it or you don't. And I don't think he's got it. So if he's not a great skater, you need an exceptional playmaker with him, and he's got to be able to finish on some of those chances. And look, he played with Ryan Johansson for more than half the season last year. It's not like Johansson can't pass the puck. We know what a creator he is. Like, if you can't get open and finish with Ryan Johansson, that's pretty concerning to me. So, I'll tell you right now, I'll predict next season, if it's here, wherever it is, his shooting percentage will be higher than 7.3%. It will go up. Does that mean that he's automatically going to transform into, like, this 25-goal scorer that we've just been waiting on at this point? I have my doubts. Like, I don't see it with him anymore. I really don't.
Yeah, it's like, again, like, the shot is very good, but then last year we talked about it during the season several times, right? Like, what's missing with that? That yeah. doesn't look the same. He was never a great skater. He's never going to be a great skater or any sort of, like, physically overwhelming kind of guy.
Well, and a big argument that people made yesterday was, well, they took him off the first power play unit, and you got to put him back on it next year to help him. Like, well, why would you change up the first power play unit from last year? It was a top 10 power play unit in the league the whole year. He got power play time last year. It's not like he didn't have it. No, it wasn't with Josi and Duchesne and Forsberg, but he got power play time. What's stopping you from being productive there? Like, I just, that argument doesn't hold a whole lot of water with me.
Well, that second unit was like the Pac-12 to the first unit's SEC. But, well, early in the season, I was like, what are they doing? I mean, the best power play that we had seen from the Preds was the year before when they had Forsberg and Tolvanen at the circles, and it was like, okay, they're actually moving the puck and he's killing it.
Yeah.
So I was surprised, but then when you look at what they did all year, why would you mess with that? You can't. So he's in a bind, but I just don't know if he's good enough. And right now, there's a building, and I understand he's young, and we'll hear that if he's around this year going into the season. We'll hear that a lot, and that's fine. It's true, but I don't think the ceiling's all that high.
Brady on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, if Tolvanen isn't getting top 6 minutes, you have to trade him. He's not a bottom six guy. There's two things that I take issue with there. Number one, what are you trading him for? Like, unless he's a throw-in piece.
Well, I think he'd have to be part of a bigger package,
right? But, like, the idea that you could trade Ellie Tolvanen by himself and get anything back for him that's of significance – like, you'd be better off to me just keeping him and paying him slightly over $1 million a year and hoping that he rebounds. So unless he's a throw-in piece, I don't think there's any value whatsoever to trading Ellie Tolvanen. But the not a bottom six guy, like, in a traditional bottom six standpoint, I agree. But that just depends on what your bottom six looks like. Like, if Cody Glass is your fourth line, quote-unquote fourth line center, that's a different looking bottom six than – that's what makes the Trenin line so interesting, because Trenin, Sissons, and Janot, while yes, they have offensive punch, they're also your shutdown line.
Yeah. They're a fourth line
right.
that scores.
Exactly. So it's a little bit of a different setup. Like, your fourth line does not have to be, if you're the Predators, the traditional, we're just going to throw a bunch of guys out there that can crush you fourth line. I mean, you can, and certainly they've done that. Like, Michael McCarron plays that way. You know, Nick Cousins is a pest in the past. He's gone now to Florida. But if Cody Glass is going to make the team, which I would be concerned if he doesn't this year, well, if your fourth line is Ellie Tolvanen and Cody Glass and whomever out there, that's a different-looking fourth line than you traditionally see.
Yeah, there are teams out there who have, like, good offensive skill on various lines yeah. because they have that many good forwards. I mean, look at what Colorado was rolling out there this year at times. And I would actually argue that, like, if Tolvanen continues to do the little things and, you know, increase his physical presence like John Hines has asked for, and he has delivered, and if he keeps doing that, I mean, actually, he may not be all that terrible of an option as a fourth line guy. So,
and Dennis on the text line says the only way he's getting off that great shot is if someone else is setting him up. And to me, that's the problem. Like, you got to be able in this league, if you're going to be a top six forward, you got to be able to have the ability to create for yourself. And if you can't do that, it's going to be difficult to be a top six forward at a full-time level in this league. Keith on the text line says, the only person I know of that can help the second line, Joe Milton. This is coming from Keith on the text line.
Can you imagine that slap shot?
My God.
That would just like go through the goalie's chest.
Make Shea Weber look like child's play back in the day.
Just like burn a hole all the way through the back of the arena.
Coming up next, we'll be joined. We won't be joined by anybody. We'll be joined by Joe Rexroad. His rant of the day that's coming up on the other side. This is Robbie and Rexroad on 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
The time is now for the Rex Rant.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mundus.
On Robbie and Rexroad, here on ESPN, 102.5, The Game, and the Game Nashville app.
You might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry.
And it is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant here on Robbie and Rexroad. Joe Rexroad's rant of the day. Joe, I turn things over to you with this nice, relaxing song coming back in.
I mean, honestly, we've found some songs that bother me more than this one. It's actually grown on me a little bit.
Really?
Okay, no, I hate it.
Okay, never mind.
I hate it. But I'll still take it over Creed.
You're such a liar.
No, I love Creed.
Who doesn't?
Yeah. Who was it that sent us? He sent us something about with the like guy impersonating Scott Stapp.
I don't remember this.
You didn't get tagged on this?
No.
Okay, I'll share it with you during the break. But it's pretty good stuff. So, I want to talk a little bit about Greg Sankey today.
Okay.
One, I guess this is multi-tiered. One is something that really concerns me. But first, and there's a lot of things about college athletics that really concern me, but this thing is, to me, untouchable, and I'm very much concerned about it. But first of all, you know, Sankey took a couple shots yesterday at the Big Ten, and it's very fair to take shots, we have been today, about the stupidity of USC and UCLA joining the Big Ten. And Sankey made a comment about things that make geographical sense. He made the comparison Texas-Oklahoma, and he's right. He also took a bit of a shot at Kevin Warren, the Big Ten's commissioner, in terms of television people, running things. This happens a lot. I mean, this has happened for years and years. Go back to like Jim Delaney as Big Ten commissioner, Mike Slav. I mean, like back and forth, little shots between the Big Ten and the SEC, right? But I got to say, you know, Greg Sankey has been a very good commissioner for the SEC. He is winning. He has won, okay? He is, for his member schools, he's doing exactly what he's paid for and probably more, and he probably deserves a raise. But if this does turn into the demise of college sports or just a diminishing of college sports long-term, as we've discussed, let's make sure that Greg Sankey is going to get plenty of credit for that too. And let's not forget how he absolutely stuck it to Bob Bowlesby from behind. I mean, as sinister a move as you could have in a situation like this. Again, smart, yes. You could even say you had to do it, but let's keep that in mind too. And let's not fool ourselves that TV people, ESPN people haven't done much to say where the SEC is going here. I mean, come on. You can't take shots. You can take the geography shot because this is another step that the Big Ten.
Although you're going to get me back on my Missouri rant that I had yesterday.
Sure. I mean, he actually used the word contiguous yesterday because it technically this state touches that state, touches that state, okay?
That's an SEC word right there.
Yes, and the Big Ten had that too because they'd gone to Pennsylvania, and then, that touches New Jersey, and then you can go over here and Iowa touches Nebraska. So until USC, UCLA, you still could make that argument. That's out the window. So fine, if you're the SEC, you can take that shot, but let's please take the TV people. Come on, man. I mean, that's exactly – what has happened with both of these leagues. But the thing that I'm concerned about is the NCAA tournament. And I really hate some of the things that are coming out of Sankey's mouth right now about basically, I know he's talking about football, but I thought Dan Wolkin wrote a smart column about this in USA Today.
Shield your eyes, Vols fans.
Yes, yes, exactly. By the way, I think I got Wolkin set up with Caroline and Michelle in Atlanta.
Good.
So we make sure we post that on all Vols message boards.
Yes.
But he made a good point, which is like, and this, it's not like this is a new discussion, but I am concerned that there's going to be a strong push for the same power schools that are in these power leagues to be what strictly makes up the NCAA tournament. And the idea, are we talking about, because of course Sankey is very down on automatic bids. And you know what? There's a good argument to be made, you know, that because of the lack of parity and because of the lack of equity in scheduling, that the automatic champions, sometimes that can give you the wrong team, right? That's why, to me, if you have a big enough playoff, you have some auto bids, you have mostly at-large bids, you're fine. But the NCAA tournament needs to be exactly as it freaking is forever, as long as sports exists. And if that gets messed with and we can't have a Belmont, a Lipscomb, a TSU, we can't have these schools from these small conferences all around the country competing with the best of the best, you have absolutely gutted the soul of the best sporting event we have in this country. I won't stand for it, and we need to be vigilant right now and not letting it happen.
Well, I think you're right to be concerned, because I thought about this too yesterday, and just the trajectory of the way things are going right now. I mean, there's going to be so much power that the Big Ten and the SEC have. You know, obviously there's a lot of money that's going to be invested in those two conferences moving forward. At some point, is there a total separation from the NCAA? Like, I think that's on the table too. There's a whole lot of things that I look around at the future. Like, college football is what it is. Like, I think we're already down that road of it's going to be the Big Ten and the SEC, and that's basically whenever the 12-team playoff comes around, it'll be teams from those two conferences in the playoff. The NCAA tournament, I think you're right to be concerned, because once we get to that point where the landscape of college athletics has changed so much, like, how do you determine who's getting in the NCAA tournament and who's not, who's playing who? Like, there's a lot that I think is in serious danger when it comes to that regard, which I'm not excited about.
Well, and this is where, look, I look at media. Media had a lot to do, I believe, with NIL. And, you know, obviously more than media, the courts had to do with it. But still, that was years and years of that drum being beaten, and it made a difference. And right now, I see some of my colleagues, our colleagues who cover college sports, who are a little too giddy about this crap, and it bothers me. But, hey, everybody's entitled to their opinion.
Sure.
You cannot let that happen. And I'll go to when the football front, whatever the playoff is, whatever the scraps of the Big 12 and Pac-12, you're telling me that an Oregon that's a great team can't have a seat at the table? You can't do that. So
I don't think they will.
Well, that can't be allowed to happen. And this NCAA tournament idea – you can break away from the NCAA and call it whatever you want. You have to understand why people are into this thing, right? Like, you have to be smart enough to understand. There's someone who's going to say, yeah, but if Florida State had that spot instead of Belmont, then you'd be better. I don't care. You got to understand that you are going to kill the tournament if you do that.
Well, the other part of this is the money, right? Like, there's – if you're in the Big Ten and the SEC, eventually, as this continues to go on, the money gap – that you're bringing in as programs between you and these other teams around the league and other programs is going to be so substantial. That's going to affect the on-court, on-field, whatever you want to call it, product at some point. Like,
that's already the case. Every year in the NCAA tournament, there's massive gaps
between
two teams that play.
But, like, right now, let's just take as it stands today, and let's just say for the sake of this discussion, which it won't be, but let's just say that for the sake of this discussion, the conferences stay exactly the same for the next 15 years. all of a sudden you're going to look around if you're a school like, I don't know, North Carolina or Clemson or one of those schools, you're going to say, how much money does Michigan have? Does USC have? Like those, there's not been that big of a gap between North Carolina and all these other schools that there will be if this continues to stay place with the Big Ten and the SEC. Like the money gap is just going to continue to grow and grow and grow.
Yeah, but the good thing is there's still a limited number of players who can be on the court.
Yeah,
limited number of scholarship. You still have so many good players and athletes that want to play somewhere, right? Like there's still, you can have mounds more money at Michigan than you can at North Carolina, and North Carolina could be in a way weaker spot because of their football program. I still think North Carolina basketball is probably going to have some of the best players. I could be wrong.
I think.
Maybe at some point that changes. But regardless, those huge – the David Goliath thing financially is not new when it comes to some of the upsets we've seen in the tournament. And it's one game. It's one 40-minute game, and those games have to continue.
St. Peter's.
I mean, seriously, St. Peter's like has rats in their gym, and they beat Kentucky. So if that can happen, thank you for bringing that up. Come on. You can't kill that.
Going to be in a really interesting spot in college athletics. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Gentry Estes from the Tennessean. We'll get his thoughts on all things Middle Tennessee sports. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Row, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.